Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of Downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
Boof, boof, boof.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 Cogo. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. Very excited to be back from the Thanksgiving break, joined as always by the managing editor, Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Chamaca?
What's up, Lewis? That was good.
Reporter Jacob McQuinney. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Very well. Thank you.
It took you a while to get in this headspace. How are you feeling now?
I'm very excited. I'm very excited to be back here.
Feeling the zone.
Making the show happen. Coming up on this show, in fact, this week, it's Beef Week. It's not about the cows. We have collected some of San Diego's hottest beefs. Is it beeves? We still haven't decided. Beefs?
I like beeves better.
I like beefs.
Yeah, from Todd Gloria and his supporters to tennis and pickleball players, we're talking about the beefs in town, when one side's against another. So somebody misinterpreted it earlier this week. They're like, well, what, it's your beef against them? And I'm like, I got a lot of beefs. But no, it's not about my beefs.
If it was all Scott's beefs, it'd be a couple weeks at least.
Yeah,
maybe a month.
There's a few beefs.
People that got beef with Scott.
But no, this is about us talking about the real rivalries in town that shape public affairs. And this is a good chance to check in with them and catch people up so that they want to follow what happens next. Also, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the San Diego City Council and how it quashed the big new housing plan, Housing Action Package 2.0. Well, that plan is back. We'll explain why it's coming back so quickly and what changed. It's going to be a good show. Stay with us. But first, we are in the giving season. Voice of San Diego is a nonprofit news organization. I don't know if you've all heard, but we depend on your support. Literally, you walking with your headphones on, playing pickleball, getting ready for the big pickleball tournament, vacuuming the house, driving to a baseball tournament in Temecula, whatever you're doing right now, the moment you get a chance to push the buttons to donate, we could really use it. Go to voiceofsandiego.org/community. That's voiceofsandiegovosd.org/community, vosd.org/community, and donate because we need it. We raise so much of our annual support resources over these 5 weeks toward the end of the calendar year, and we need you to step up if you value this service. We've got a few people who have donated already, and they can put a little note in, and they have. Ed C. wrote, Lisa Halverstadt's an amazing journalist and the most incredible person on the planet. Okay. I mean, there's the Dalai Lama and Lisa, right?
Agreed, yeah, for sure.
Lisa gets a lot of shout-outs in these. We have to recognize that, I think. Keith L. writes, Scott plays poker, and I really dig the podcast. I know who Keith is. I see him at these old tournaments. I don't play poker anymore with softballs taking over that part of the brain, but I do enjoy.
I like how he didn't say, like, Scott's, like, super awesome at poker or kicked my ass. Like, he's just like,
no,
you just play poker.
I'm a fish. They love me because I just lose, and they're like, oh, they need people like that to come.
Yes.
There's a whole thing in poker. You don't talk bad about the people who aren't good because you want them to come play. And so they're all nice to me. They're like,
That's a very good strategy. Yeah.
Come play with us. Yeah.
You're great. You're doing good. You're improving a lot.
Scott, I brought you some sparkling waters. Come on.
Oh my God. That's how they get you to buy a Gucci bag.
All right, David T. says the journalism is fantastic and the podcast is fire. Keep on keeping on. Thank you, David. Lucy D. says, I like the podcast and learn a lot about San Diego while I'm gardening. Keep up the good work. Thank you. And this one is Emily T. says, I love the podcast, all of it. Just to be clear, all of it. But especially Andrea Lopez Villafania.
But especially Andrea
Lopez
Villafania.
I think you said that last part a little quick. Let's hear it in like
that's
half
like
speed
the
of what you
thing.
Just said.
Especially it's like the Coco intro. Yeah. Thanks, Emily. Mm-hmm.
Thank you all who gave. And you are next. Join the community at VOSD.org/community. And maybe we'll read yours. Before the Thanksgiving break, we talked with our Will Huntsbury about the Housing Action Plan 2.0. This was the set of reforms that the city council seemed ready to pass and then abruptly decided not to pass. Would have made it easier to build homes in all kinds of ways. For instance, in Barrio Logan, where the new zoning plan would make sort of junkyards and some other places residential lots. But it wasn't going to let those turn over to residential until the businesses sold. Like, so it could be decades down the line. Well, the new law would have said they had a certain time limit to sunset to switch those uses. So it would have kind of pushed those properties into residential a little bit faster. If you have a strip mall somewhere, it would have been easier to build a lot more homes on the actual commercial property. Commercial density bonus there would have made it easier to build student housing in different spots. But a couple of the proposals got to be a little controversial and it fell apart. So one of them was it was going to, you know, as Will described really well, it would allow you to build more units if you have affordable on site, right? But if you include affordable units in your project, you could build more. That's been part of the sort of formula for a long time. But one of the changes would have allowed you to build that affordable housing off-site somewhere else.
Yeah.
And
not just off-site, but like not to the same standards with the same amenities.
Right.
As like what you would experience if it was on-site and you had access to before.
Right. And so a couple city council members brought up concern about that after Will's piece about it that he wrote. And then the other thing they had concerns about there right now, when you build housing, you pay developer impact fees. And a lot of those fees are what fund parks and stuff. So that's why some of the newer neighborhoods have nicer parks is because they have more recent developer impact fees and that they build parks and they're nicer. And older parts of the city have rundown parks and it's because they're not building a lot of stuff and there's a lot of fees going into creating parks and stuff like that. So one of the ongoing sort of policies we've had is that for micro units, for units, studio units and such, there was a fee waiver. You didn't have to pay those developer impact fees on those. And a lot of people liked that, developers liked that, and people in the homeless world or advocacy world liked it because those were the most likely units you could get homeless people into you know, off the street if they were created. And so it incentivized the creation of that. On the other hand, people said, Well, if you have a family, that doesn't really help that because the families need 3-bedroom apartments at least. And so the plan was to switch the waiver from put the fee back on the small units, take the fee off of the 3-bedroom units. They objected to both of those and it failed. It's coming back. So this week, the city council president, Sean Elo Rivera, and Mayor Todd Gloria announced that they're going to bring it back, that they've come to some kind of deal on it. It sounds like they have agreed that they will require the units built off-site in affordable housing to get that density bonus for the other development, that that'll have to be built to the same standard, right?
And in the same community
area,
right?
Yeah, similar community income.
Because that was the thing. Like the way it was written originally was you would have the option, you'd still get this bonus and you could build offsite, not to the same standards, and you could build in a community, in a poorer community.
Right. And so that'll be a big change. And they didn't change the fee waiver. So it looks like they made a deal that'll come forward. But I wanted to get back into the debate. There was a really interesting moment in the discussion. So There were people who are opposed because of this concern, but then there were city council members who were concerned. In particular, one, Jen Campbell, who was concerned about the whole package just in general.
It's like a lot going on.
Yeah, she's like, I'm good with the commercial thing, you know, switching strip malls into housing. You should put housing on top of those retailers. I'm good with the junkyard being switched eventually as soon as possible to housing. I'm not good with some of these other things. And here was how she articulated that.
But the past collection of changes have barely been implemented, and yet the city continues to modify contentious programs, believing that they will bring enough housing. I don't think they will. Our residents need to know and understand what these programs are doing to our communities. Are they causing apartment buildings to be built in single-family backyards? Yes. In District 2, they are causing that to happen.
So I heard that, and I live in District 2. I was curious what she was referring to. I asked the office, her office, to tell me a couple examples of on the coast where this is happening. And they wrote back, quote, this is from Elsa Sevilla, her director of communications, quote, our office does not have access to examples of apartment buildings under construction in single family backyards.
Whoops.
So now this is one of those classic moments in reporting where it's like you're curious about something. And that's what journalists everywhere have to just learn is like, if you're curious about something, you might poke at it. Because you never know what you're going to get, and you're going to get a little nugget out of it. Now, set aside the ridicule that she would bring that up and say it that way and have it not be true. However, there are some really interesting things going on with backyards, right? Mm-hmm. So across San Diego, you were saying like your grandma hates ADUs, right?
Yeah.
Granny hates granny flats.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to shame my grandmother on air, Scott, but she's not a fan, suffice to say. Yes.
Right. There are a lot of people who are concerned city's rather unique accessory dwelling unit or granny flat policy, right? So I thought CalMatters did a pretty good job on a story where they came in and talked about this unique version of the law that San Diego has that allows for a lot of these accessory dwelling units to be built. And so if you look at the CalMatters story, Ben Christopher did a good job on it. We can put it in the show notes, the link. But basically, there are a lot of projects in the pipeline and that have already been built that really kind of do look like apartment buildings in backyards. Now, not in District 2 necessarily on the coast, but in Golden Hill, Canto, they talked a lot about some of these places. So just here's how it works.
Well, to put a finer point on it, I mean, there was one that he mentioned in the piece that was permitted that had 76 units, like 36 of them or 30-something of them were ADUs, which is, as he cheekily wrote about in the piece, I mean, that's an apartment building.
That's not a granny flat.
Yeah, in all but name, right, I guess. Yeah.
And it's great. We need units.
Sure, yeah.
But let's go ahead and be honest about what's happening here, right?
What we're building. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, I currently live in an ADU. Mm-hmm. And it's like a one bedroom. It's small. It's what I would consider a granny flat, right?
Yeah,
you put your granny casita in there. Yeah, it's a little casita. And but my neighbors, and I don't know like what policy or what they used to do their thing, but it's like a whole apartment building, like two apartment buildings next to us.
How many units?
I think it's four.
Yeah. So here's how it works. Basically, if you agree to build one of these ADUs, and if you agreed to keep the rent low according to the income restrictions, they you as a developer or a homeowner, if you're building it, are allowed to build a second unit and rent it for whatever you want. And so you can kind of flip that back and forth, do an affordable one, get another one, do an affordable one, get another. And you flip it so many times that it, there's some restrictions on height and a couple other things, but after a while, you can get it up to dozens and dozens of units, and that's what they tracked. And this apparently is unique throughout the country. And so as Christopher wrote in CalMatters, he said, a total of 159 projects with 1,200 units have been submitted to the city as of October. Just half of them, fewer than half of them, in fact, have been permitted, and far fewer have broken ground. But it's a lot coming down, and obviously some of them have already come up. So, again, not necessarily what Jen Campbell said, but certainly a development that's occurring in city stuff.
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzan, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
Welcome to Beef Week. Let's define Beef Week for a second. So I don't think I originated Beef Week. I think this was actually a Sarah Libby creation years ago. The idea, of course, is not about steak. It's not about cows. Beef, this is the beef you might have with somebody. But it's not about a single dispute. You know, it's not about like a neighbor suing a neighbor over a fence. It's more about neighbors who have been warring for years about some sort of core problem they have with each other, and then the disputes that result from that. It's like a source of disputes. Mm-hmm. It's like the sea lions in La Jolla versus the La Jollans. You know, like there's a lot of disputes between them.
La Jollans hate sea.
I feel like almost it. Well, I guess you're right.
I didn't know that was a beef.
But I feel like there's a parallel beef between like the sea lions and the tourists or something. You know?
Yeah. That's what I thought the beef would be. Yeah.
I mean, animals.
I guess they do kind of smell a little bit, but they're damn cute.
Well, there's the problem with the seals. Sorry, they're not the sea lions. They're different. The seals at the children's pool is that the children's pool was supposed to be for the children. And then the seals came and they're like, well, actually, it's a good place for us to lay because it's nice and calm.
Aww.
And then they poop so much that it's so bad for that water right there that it's now pretty much off limits for bathing. So there is beef between the La Jolla children and the seals.
Kids have so many places to
seals.
Go. Yeah, I vote for seals too, for sure. 100%.
So that's a longstanding beef.
Uh-huh.
And there's more. So you guys have divvied up
the beefs
that our staff did.
Beefs.
Look, this was unquestionably a way for us to kind of take a breather for the week and get people caught up on some of their investments.
Don't tell them that.
Sorry. but part of my fundamental belief as a journalism leader is that you need to have moments where you catch people up on the storylines that they're following so that you can like tell more updates, so that it drives demand for further coverage about some of these stories if they understand what the underlying issues are, right?
The worst thing is like when you come across one of these beefs and you immediately know it, and like you watch like trash reality TV, you know, like a clip of the Kardashian sisters fighting is like really funny and interesting, but then you're like, well, why are they fighting? And like, there's no context to like, well, this all started when, you know, so-and-so, whatever.
Right.
And that's like kind of what we're doing here.
There you go. So what do you want to start with? Which beef?
So our Tigas Lane, she's our North County reporter. Yes. She's been covering Palomar Health, and she's been writing different stories. There was like a change with like, who provides certain doctors that some of the board members didn't agree with.
Well, let's stop for a second. What's Palomar Health?
Palomar Health is a public health care district in North County. They have campuses in Escondido and Poway. So North County Public Care District.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tigas has been following different things. If you've been following her reporting, she wrote about how the healthcare district itself is dealing with some financial issues.
And just to be clear, these districts are public government entities. Yes. It's just like a water district or something.
Yes.
And then they hire hospital either themselves or contractors to run hospitals in the public good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the point, is that, you know, these neighbors decided they all need a hospital. They get together, they create one of these districts. It's funded in part with public resources. And then they use all that to create these hospitals that provide health care.
So and because simple. Of that, the board members of the hospital are elected.
Exactly.
Because it's a public hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Tigas has been writing, you know, lots of different, you know, disputes and longstanding tensions between the hospital's executives and two of the board members. The board members, the majority of them tend to go with what the hospital executives want. They pretty much tend to agree, but then there's like two board members who, you know, are constantly questioning the actions. And part of that, which is funny, like we're kind of involved in the beef, is that the board members have gotten in trouble, the ones who oppose a lot of the moves, for speaking to us and speaking to the media, for speaking to KPBS about issues within the hospital. So they've, you know, taken votes of no confidence against these board members. Tigas recently reported that one of the board members is suing the hospital because she's arguing that, or she's arguing on First Amendment grounds because she spoke out about terms of use agreement that you had to agree to if you wanted to enter this like public hospital's site. And so she spoke up about that. She talked to Tigas about how, you know, she didn't agree with what the hospital had done with these weird terms of use agreements. And so now she, you know, just being told that she shouldn't have spoken to the media without connecting with the hospital's media group.
So, right.
So lots of little stuff. And the latest board meeting was pretty heated. They had to take a break kind of during the meeting to make sure everybody's nerves were
calm. Yeah, you just talked about the website dispute, and we made fun of this a few weeks ago, where that you had to agree that you wouldn't take information from this public website and republish it to have access to the site, which is insane.
And it wasn't like any website or any sort of like online thing has a terms of use agreement,
right?
But it was like a full on big pop up, like you go into Palomar Health, whatever .com or .org, whatever it is, like this pop up comes up, and you cannot access anything unless you agree to it.
Which is all insane. But that's a minor issue, because they're also arguing about the fundamental finances of this organization, right? Mm-hmm. Like this, the executives are like, we're good. We got tons of money coming in. and it's not so clear that they're all set. And they have a tremendous amount of debt they have to deal with.
Yes. And one of the board members who Tigas has spoken to and included in some of her previous coverage, who has... you know, kind of been scolded by the other board members for speaking. You know, he's concerned with the financial situation and he feels like he should be free as a board member who is elected by the public to speak out for, you know, what he disagrees with and what the hospital is doing. Right.
Otherwise, like, what is the point of
what
being
are you
elected?
Doing? Right.
All right, that's a good beef.
It's check, a good beef.
Yeah, check that one out. That was Palomar versus board members. Was that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you got one, Jacob.
Yeah, I got a beef for you. Okay, so what is San Diego's biggest crisis? Would you say? And I'm not. I know Scott. There may be an urge to say something about palm trees or eucalyptus, but it's not that.
Well, I'd probably go with like homelessness and the cost of living.
Homelessness?
But here's do you want my ranking?
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear the definitive Scott Lewis crisis ranking.
Definitive Scott Lewis crisis ranking in San Diego.
From most serious?
From least serious to most serious crisis.
Okay, and again,
San Diego.
So how many
do
we have
still
here?
Serious.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I couldn't find any light ones. I think like at least number 5, I got infrastructure rot. So I'm thinking like the stormwater system, the parks are a disaster, the public restrooms are disgusting. In particular, the city of San Diego, the older neighborhoods in particular. Yes, exactly. If they're open at all.
Yeah.
Like Morley Field, places like that. It's just like, come on. These
it's
are
pretty gnarly.
Really great places.
Yeah.
But you should have a comfortable place to do things.
The past couple of years we've gone to Morley Field for essentially 4th of July.
Yeah.
Us and a bunch of friends. And the past 2 years the bathrooms have been locked on 4th of July.
On 4th of July.
On 4th of July, and there is just like a mountain of
gross, don't.
Items.
I went to East Lake for a softball tournament, and the bathroom there was like it was just like, I just wanted to be there all the time. I was like, this is wonderful. I should just hang out here. It's just, why can't we have nice things?
Okay.
Number four. The inequality and inequity and just absurd disparities in the education system. I mean, it's crazy, like the disparities and then the overall lack of excellence, right? Like wouldn't it be great if like it was just well regarded that San Diego had excellent schools? Like, why not just what it would be like to live somewhere where everybody's just like, these schools here are amazing. They're so wonderful.
Well, some people live in parts of the city where that's true.
Yeah, but even like, and it's just, and even, but within the city of San Diego and the San Diego Unified, like the disparities are just horrific. Mm-hmm. And they're in the same district. All right. Number 3, I would put the border sewage crisis. I think it's infecting and like ruining, or at least partially ruining, the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. Mm. The coastline from Tijuana up to Coronado is scary and getting worse, because it used to be just rains and now it's all the time. And I consider that a pretty severe, but seems like fixable crisis. Mm. I mean, fixing the education system and that seems like something a little bit more addressable.
This feels a little bit like a surfer bias, no?
Maybe a little bit. All right, and then number 2, the worst crisis, the cost of living. Now, this is the housing, but also the highest water rates, highest electricity rates, gas, storing, insuring, and maintaining vehicles, public transit, lack of availability. It's very hard to live here. And
it
as
is,
somebody
it is,
who's
yeah.
an employer and other, it's something that keeps me up. And then related, but I think it's got to be its own category, is the number 1 crisis, homelessness.
Homelessness.
So, sorry. Do you have somewhere you were taking that of? Where,
yeah,
where
well,
the real...
yes, I do. Okay, have you heard of pickleball?
It didn't make a stop.
I have. I'm a new fan of the ball that you pickle. I suspect you might be going where I think that this is the real crisis in San Diego is lack of availability of pickleball courts.
Not only that, but there are some folks who view pickleball almost like an invasive species. Right? It's trying to take over the courts of the native species, which are the tennis players, right? And so
the palm trees of the paddle sports.
Yes.
And so
they're not trees, they're weeds. But
for a couple of years now, pickleball has been, believe it or not, the fastest growing sport in the United States, mm-hmm. which I can't believe it, but believe it or not, it's true, right?
Yeah.
Everybody from LeBron James to Tom Brady have gotten in on buying stakes in pickleball teams, which again, I just cannot believe. Here's
the way to understand pickleball. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hear it.
So tennis is hard. Like tennis, if you want to like play an enjoyable round of tennis, you need to like practice.
Okay.
And this
is sounding dangerous. You might get attacked by pickleball players depending on how this ends up.
Well, that means you have to like go through months of uncomfortable and awkward training.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start to have a good like tennis experience, right? Pickleball, you can, yes, there are obviously experts who are very good who would destroy a fool like me. However, a fool like me can very quickly have a pickleball experience with other people that is very enjoyable and then start to progress rather quickly. So it's an accessible sport.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
Except for the availability of courts.
Yes. Okay. So pickleball, fastest growing sport in America. You would assume in a place like San Diego where there's sun and beautiful weather that we would have a robust option of pickleball courts. But for very long, that has not been the case. And so what have pickleball activists done? These radical fellows who have seen the demand and felt the cold, shoulder of a government that has not been willing to provide the people what they yearn for, what they crave, which is a place to ping pong their balls, all day and night.
And they haven't mobilized about bathrooms or about plumbing or roads or pollution. It's been about the accessibility and availability,
which is
of these courts.
Kind of ironic. I mean, the demographic of pickleball, you'd imagine they need to use the bathroom more often, but maybe we should kind of, I don't know if we should keep that. Anyway, okay, so this lack of courts, right? It's been a zero-sum game for the pickleball fellas. Essentially, there are not enough pickleball courts, and the easiest thing that they've seen was to take some of the tennis courts. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a logical thing to them, right? They see these tennis courts, and in their minds, they're underutilized. And they have gone to such lengths to prove that they're underutilized. They've done everything from take screenshots of the court logs for a whole year. They every single night to show that these courts are not used all the time, right? They've hired drone pilots to surveil courts from the skies to show that these courts are underutilized and that the pickle fellas really should be the ones who are benefiting from this prime real estate.
This is like receipts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I got a front row seat to this because I'm involved at Rob Field.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Beach,
okay then.
And that's where the pickleball guys zeroed in on Rob Field and said that's where we need to put the pickleball courts, and the fight between them and tennis actually forced the city to open up the long-term plan for Rob Field.
Yes.
And include pickleball in there. But that was a vicious fight between each
vicious
other.
Like, fight.
Both sides were really tough on each other.
Yes, they were. And part of what is going on here, right, is that there have been some courts that have opened up, but what pickleballers want is kind of, as I wrote in this piece, a sort of like pickleball mecca, right? They want this place where pickleball pilgrims will travel from all around and where they can convert new picklers to their sport of choice. And they saw Peninsula tennis courts at Rob Field as the perfect foundation for this new, metropolis of picklers. And what they ended up finding when they tried to push that door open was staunch opposition from the tennis players. And so over the past year, this feud has really gotten to a fever pitch, right? There was a sort of like radical pickleball play-in protest that happened. Police were called. All throughout this time, tennis people have been pushing back. Pickleballers have been showing up to Parks and Rec meetings demanding change, and felt really like the city has been, and Stefan Boyland, who runs the San Diego Pickleball Association, has said it explicitly that he feels that the government apparatus of San Diego is in the pocket of big tennis, right? And so
there's civil rights have evolved to needing to deal with this. This is the new front.
It's the have and have nots courts, right? Of courts to play on.
Now they did get a huge win at Barnes Tennis Center, where they've opened up now 20 courts, I believe.
19.
Don't
get ahead of yourself.
But it's also good there because there's also a side dispute, right, about the actual noise, like the
So pickleball does have a very distinctive like plinking noise when you hit these wiffle balls against the ground. But I will say that even these new courts, it didn't really get to where the picklers wanted, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't this mecca. It wasn't a club run by and for picklers.
Yeah.
So these are still on a tennis club. These are still run by the iron glove of the tennis, you know, mafia. And one of the things that they really were most frustrated by and felt like was a real slap in the face was that all of the income generated by these pickleball courts at this tennis club would go to fund youth tennis.
I mean, I think that's part of the heart is like there was a dream of a sort of entrepreneurial version for these pickleballers to like create some truly, profitable enterprises that aren't going to be necessarily possible right now.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, there is this long-term plan to really bring even more courts to the Peninsula Club over at Robb Field. But, you know, on your list of San Diego's greatest crises was the infrastructure rot. And so there probably is no hope that these are going to happen anytime soon. The director of the Peninsula Tennis Club at Robb and Stefan Boyland had engaged in mediation because this feud had gotten so just toxic, right? They didn't really agree to anything, but they both agreed that it brought the volume down a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you know, pickleball is the king in waiting, and we'll see if tennis is willing to give up the crown.
Well, that's another beef and has led to a lot of disputes. Seems perfect. Great job.
Thank you.
All right. What's up with yours now?
Great beef.
It was a good beef.
I'm going to tell this one as Ulises told me when he saw our Instagram post. He said, "Did you know that SoCal's water wars threatened to tear San Diego apart?" I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, they're beefing." I was like, "They're beefing?" He's like, "Yeah. It all started with two rural community water districts." That's as far as he got. So let me fill you in.
Yeah, I see what you're doing.
It was good. So this is something that our Mackenzie Elmer, environment reporter, has been following, but Scott's a bit of a nerd on the water world as well. Very familiar with the beef.
I thought she did a good job of explaining how interesting this fight is. So we've talked about it a number of times. These two farming water districts in north part of San Diego County have now voted to leave the San Diego County Water Authority, and they're in the process of making that divorce final, where they'll go instead and buy their water from Eastern, which is a Riverside County district, which is connected to the Metropolitan Water District, not affiliated with San Diego County Water Authority at all. Now, why this is so interesting is it really is a longstanding debate. It's not just about this beef. This particular dispute, because they have been frustrated that these two water districts in particular, that the water authority has been so obsessed with securing water and water reliability from investments in infrastructure here, but also in purchases of water rights from the Imperial County, that all of that has led to just billions of dollars of debt and higher water rates, which has made it very expensive for them to keep farming. And so that is the dispute, and that's what's interesting. But what she points out, I think, and explains really well in this Beef Week entry, is that this is a big issue. This isn't going away even with this divorce. Now, the Water Authority passed or helped pass legislation that will make it much harder for future districts to leave, because the entire county would have to vote to allow them to leave. But
and that's what they tried to stop Rainbow and Fallbrook from leaving.
Yeah, they tried to, they tried to get that legislation passed before that happened, but they weren't able to do it. But that underlying tension about these mostly farming communities who want the cheapest water possible to keep farming, and these urban areas that are also, you know, trying to make sure that there's enough water into perpetuity so they can keep building businesses, biotechs, infrastructure, universities, housing, all these things. But then there's also this other part that's creating a tremendous amount of tension that's adding to this, which is that San Diego is using, 30-40% less water than it did over, decades ago. And that's because we're getting better at using water, but also because we've priced out a lot of the farmers. And so not using that water means we pay less for it, which means that the debt that they already built up to build all these things still has to get paid, so they have to raise water rates even more.
The girl math is not math in here.
Yeah, so...
Oh, God.
So there's the bottom line is that we talked about the cost of living earlier. This is a big part of it. There's, as McKinsey has established, there's no real way for the water agencies to subsidize or help people who can't afford their water bills. And so that needs to be addressed at some point, especially if these are going up. But at the heart of it is this debate about, can they keep building infrastructure like a lot of them want to do to make this more reliable, more dams, more recycling plants, maybe even some pumps that can ship the water elsewhere? Or are they going to need to stop because they've hit the limit? And the limit has been, you know, sort of signaled by these two agencies breaking away. So it's a big issue and a great, well done Beef Week entry, I thought, by McKinsey. All right, Jacob, your turn. Let's go.
Okay, so another beef here, our last beef. I can't say that it's as important as the pickleball tennis beef, but it probably some people would say it matters, right?
Yeah.
All jokes aside, Lisa Halverstadt did an excellent job of breaking down where people now stand on Mayor Todd Gloria's homelessness tactics, right? If you can rewind the clock a little bit, he ran on basically being the opposite of what Kevin Faulkner was, right?
Maybe not the opposite, but certainly a big change from former Mayor Kevin Faulkner was.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
Just to be clear, Kevin Faulkner's whole thing was like, well, he ignored the problem for a long time. Then after hepatitis A and that crisis, he kind of, what we called the Faulkner Doctrine, focused on creating immediate shelters and kind of really pushing people off the street as much as he could with these sweeps.
Yeah. So Todd ran on, I guess not the opposite, but a much less of an emphasis on the punitive measures, right? He wanted to get law enforcement sort of out of this homelessness space and focus on providing people shelter, providing people short and primarily long-term access to housing.
That it was a housing problem, yes, and needs housing to be fixed.
Yeah, he defined it as a housing problem, right? And said, we're not going to get out of this unless we build housing. So that won him supporters. That won him supporters who were both in, you know, the homelessness activist sphere and folks who were not, like Bill Walton, for example. Now, a couple of years into his term as mayor, he has seemingly lost both of those sorts of factions. He's tried to walk this kind of tightrope between the punitive stuff, like this camping ban that he pushed so feverishly, providing more shelters. And it doesn't seem that this balancing act that he's been trying to do has really satisfied either side. You know, the activists have said that he has gone back to some of the punitive stuff that Faulkner was doing that they really didn't like. Meanwhile, the more wealthy folks like Bill Walton have said that he is not doing anything near enough to clean encampments, to keep the streets safe. And so throughout all of that, it seems like both sides have really buyer's remorse with Todd Gloria's approach to homelessness.
Yeah, she did a really good job, I think, of finding these old supporters of his campaign for mayor and talking to them about what he's done since then that has so upset them. And again, very different perspectives.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought there was like an interesting through line between both of them. And it gets back to what I keep referencing when we talk about this issue, which is it feels like they're both saying he has not addressed it with the urgency or emergency mm-hmm. sort of intent that we expect of it.
And despite the fact that they both view what that urgency looks like very, 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 couldn't view it more differently, they both feel that that urgency is lacking.
Yeah, that he hasn't met the problem
yeah.
with the emphasis. Now, we fall into this as journalists, I think, a lot, where some people will say, you'll be like, well, I'm getting flack from both sides. I must be right over the target, right?
Yeah.
Like it happens all the time. And I think there's also another way to interpret getting flack from both sides, which you could be just not doing well, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think like that's part of what would be interesting here. Is he getting flack from both sides of this because he's truly trying to find a middle ground that works for the most number of people and the best outcomes for San Diego? Or is he getting flack from both sides because he is coming off as a weaker and ineffective solver of what is very clearly the number one issue in San Diego, and maybe something that even the mayor is incapable with all yeah. the power a mayor has of truly alleviating?
Well, and to be clear, I mean, this is a problem that mayors in cities, large cities across the country are dealing with almost, you know, precisely how he is, right? This balancing act that they feel they need to do. And it doesn't seem like there are many people who are coming out on the winning side.
Yeah, I thought one of the exercises I had that was really interesting was when I looked at the amicus briefs that were filed mm-hmm. in support of the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, mm-hmm. that's trying to get the Supreme Court to review its case, where it tried to cite homeless individuals uh-huh. for camping, and the federal court said you're not allowed to do that. That you can't punish or prohibit homelessness. You can't punish somebody for being homeless. And they're like, well, if we can't cite people, if we can't do this, like what can we do? Like how are we supposed to address this? And are we really supposed to have a unit for every single homeless person before we ask one of them
yeah.
to leave? And that's the big debate going forward. So when you look at the amicus brief for all of these, the cities that submitted friendly briefs, as San Diego did, to the Grants Pass thing, saying we need to be allowed to sweep these streets, it's incredible how diverse some of these cities. So there's Orange County cities, there's mm-hmm. Phoenix was represented in there. I mean, these wow. aren't just like West Coast places. There's a lot of cities across the country that are feeling like they don't know how to handle this. Mm.
Damn, that sounds like a post.
Whatever,
editor.
As we move forward, it'll be interesting to see how Gloria continues to navigate this, right? He's expressed that he's very proud with some of the work that they've done. They've opened, unquestionably, they've opened new shelter. They have opened, you know, safe camping sites, and Gloria has touted all of that as part of his commitment to solving this problem, and says that, you know, as he moves forward, this is still his number one priority.
I would say there has been a shift over the last year. Remember a year and a half ago or something, he was dead set against safe camping areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, look, you've got to set aside areas for people to go if you're going to push them off the street.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you're not smart. And, and now they're embracing that idea and trying to find a lot of other places that they could do that, especially if you're going to have an emphasis on prohibiting people from camping.
Yeah.
Where do you want them to go? You yeah. can't kill them. And this concentration camp is not going to happen. Stop talking about that.
Yeah.
So find places where they're allowed. And he has dialed it up, I think, a little bit, but certainly not met the problems sort of noise with his own level of noise. If it feels like if you were facing this crisis, you would want to make as much noise about it as it warrants, because otherwise, people are just going to not think you're taking it seriously, even if you're doing everything behind the scenes you possibly can. And I think it's indicated by like his State of the City speech from just several months ago. Like, I guess almost a year ago exactly, where it was a big part of it was about sidewalks before it even got to homelessness. It's just been 100% homelessness. Yeah. That's all anybody is freaking out about.
Well, and some of that empty space has allowed, you know, former rivals like Kevin Faulkner himself to come back in with their own spin on the messaging, right? And in some ways, Kevin Faulkner's kind of positioned himself to the left of Todd Gloria.
Like, you should have provided more.
You should have provided more. You should have been more, you know, empathetic and treated, you know, folks who are struggling with homelessness in a more compassionate way.
Yeah, so you shouldn't have done the ban without more shelter. It was wild that was the opening. It's also wild that with all this rancor about his thing and his approach, there's no major candidate running against him. So Lisa did a quote here of Larry Turner in the Beef Week post, who is running. He's a cop running for mayor, lives downtown. He's taken this whole, like, we should create this.
Well, lives downtown, huh?
Yeah. He's taken this concept and endorsed it of this concentration camp somewhere in the remote area where you could ship the homeless population and get even harder on allowing them anywhere in the city center. But you know, I don't know how serious that campaign or how well funded it'll be. And so it's odd that with all that sort of space he created of opposition, there hasn't been a major candidate to step into it.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe his tenure has demonstrated that this job just kind of sucks.
He's done a lot to emphasize that point, that this is a very difficult job.
Yeah.
And it's miserable and you don't want to do it. And everybody's like, wow, I don't want to run for that. He looks miserable.
I think he's right.
Well, it's a great series, The Beefs. You can check it out. We hope you were not only entertained, but also you benefited from learning how they're shaping San Diego. You can see all the beeves at VOSD.org/beef. That's VOSD.org/beef. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in this greater Little Italy section of downtown San Diego. It's the most popular public affairs podcast that is being recorded after the Thanksgiving break in that part of San Diego. Join the Voice of San Diego community today at VOSD.org/community. Any donation you make has a big impact on our organization and helps us continue to make this podcast. All the special feature weeks like Beef Week, my politics report, Lisa's homelessness coverage, and all the local coverage you value from our little operation. It does take money to make this possible and to handle all the cost of living issues in San Diego for all of our employees. Again, that's VOSD.org/community. Make your donation there at VOSD.org/community. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our managing editor. Jacob McQuinney's our education reporter. Nate Johns, our expert producer of this show and makes things work on the site and all throughout our organization. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.